Hello and welcome to Horse Players Happy Hour. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you, not at Walt Whitman Brewery today, but back in the Brooklyn bunker, back in Brooklyn all week. This was the spot where we originated these broadcasts back all the way in March. Funny and happy to be back here with you, and also joined by the usual co-host on these programs. He's a stalwart on the In the Money Media Network via his own eponymous podcast. You also know him from the fantastic work he does and will be continuing to do over on NBC. I'm talking about TV's Matt Bernier. What's up, my man?
PTF, doing well. Good to see you back in sort of the standard homestead there. I mean, I'm sure it's like anything else. You know, you obviously have the place up there, but you get to a certain point, at least I know I can only speak for myself, but when you're gone for any length of time from what your sort of standard surroundings are, at a certain point, you like to get back into sort of the normalcy or some semblance of whatever normal is these days.
It has felt good. And I will say Monday through Wednesday this week with Perrin having her regular school, no bus or anything, like we had to bring her there and pick her up, which was unusual. But it was just it was nice to have her with her friends and a normal school day and some semblance of normal work days. Now, Thursday and Friday back doing the distance learning, back in my teacher's role. It's been straight back to chaos. And in many ways, I do feel like these distance learning weeks and days might make more sense. So I'm going to be bouncing back and forth. You may see me at the Walton Whitman Brewing Company. You may see me in the Brooklyn bunker, but it was nice to get back down here to the city and even in its strange state. Very odd to see all I'd heard about, of course, all the outdoor dining and that stuff, but to be seeing that what that actually was all about and looked like a little crazy, just very, very different and going to be interesting to follow along. But as we've said from the beginning of this stuff, it's great to have racing as a distraction and or just something that keeps the beat moving on. And very excited to be talking to you here over the course of the next hour. We're going to be looking at this contest that's about to begin. You can still play if you haven't already. This is our Horse Players Happy Hour. You have plenty of opportunities, but you know, on horseplayers.com to qualify for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. But it is coming upon us now, and it's crunch time for those who are in qualify or bust mode. This is a feeder into Saturday's BCBC qualifier, and the best part is that it's also a charitable donation, and that the entire rake for this contest benefits the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We'll talk a little bit more about those organizations as we go on today. We're back to the two-track format. We've got the next several races from both Belmont and Santa Anita, which, of course, we are so happy to have back today. So this contest, you can get involved. It's a low buy-in, and you have your opportunity to start that journey to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, a contest that many believe is the best one of all, and one I know you've had success in. Matt, are you participating in today's feeder?
I am, yes. I've already got my entry. I've got all of my picks in, and this is going to be one of those nice weeks where it's not sort of a last-second, you know, last-minute rush to try to get things in. Did a little bit of work. Don't know if it means it's going to be better or worse than any other weeks, but did a little bit of work. Have some picks in here. Also involved in the 10K over on Horse Tourneys this afternoon. So just feel like it's time to at least start kind of shaking off a little bit of the rust. We're getting closer to the Breeders' Cup. You know, I've talked about it, how I almost would rather go through a little bit of a cold spell right now. Give me the trough right now so we can peak in about 5 weeks' time. But yeah, I think it's time to start kind of getting back into the swing of things, getting into the groove, looking for some value options and things of that nature. So I'm involved here, involved over on Horse Tourneys. Looking forward to it.
Now, last week you were in a rush and you did the play all the pull strategy. It was working really well through the first three races. Where did you end up?
I believe Shona and I both ended up like 14th and 15th. There was a nice price that ran in the last race. We were both in the second to last and last sort of spots, had everything sort of gone to form, and instead there was a bit of a price. But I have to be honest with you, in an instance like that, I selfishly would have felt kind of bad if I had qualified with the all four sort of idea.
Look, he's supposed to be an expert. Yeah. He's on racingpicks.com as an expert, and he wins playing all the fours. I see your point. It could have been more trouble than it was worth, potentially.
It's just one of those things where I would have felt guilty in a way of like, you know, and really it was simply because I liked the four in the first race. And I said, we're riding the fours then. And you know, it was nice that the first race worked, but after that, I would have felt a little bit embarrassed had I gotten through, and it didn't work out. But this week, there will be no embarrassment if I do qualify.
There you go. I will say this, and the reason I brought it up, if you still are watching this live, checking us out through the Breeders' Cup social media, get involved and just pick a number and play it, because again, the VIG going all to charity. If you're like, well, that's just silly, I'll give directly to the organizations. You know what? You can do that too.
Sure.
TBAftercare.com for the TAA and TRF.inc/players for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And right now, we have this very special offer. While we have a limited number of these bottles left, and Matt, I still got to get your address to make sure I get you yours. We're going to be doing a big mailing of the In the Money Players Podcast American Malt Whiskey, this barrel pick that I made. If you donate $125 or more to TRF during this window, I'm going to send you a bottle of this whiskey that I picked out, and it's I'm super happy with how it turned out. I should be drinking a cocktail with the whiskey. I'm in. There it is. Producer Craig, Johnny on the spot there. He shows me on the porch there on the little house on the east side with a pleasing sized dram of the American malt whiskey. Check that out.
Fantastic.
Super happy with that. And yeah, we'll get you your body. And I won't judge even if you mix it with soda, Matt.
No. Look, I mean, this is the only reason the mix is happening right now is simply because it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, I'll make the transition at dinner tonight over to the straight stuff. I shouldn't say just straight. I throw it on the rocks. That's it.
No. You can drink this. This is whiskey that helps the horses. So you can drink it any which way you want. Let's give a quick thought on this race at Belmont before we let people follow along. I think, you know, as much money as we've made donating the VIG in the course of these tournaments, and we got to get an updated number. Last I heard, though, we were over $5,000 on that, and I'm sure it's considerably more now.
That was a while back, too.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get that updated number. But we've also had people make donations based on winners we've given out, especially this hot streak you're on. I think there's maybe a chance that can go ahead and continue. Who did you use in this seventh race at Belmont today?
I chalked out. I didn't have anything particularly interesting here. I went with the 9-horse, Mo Me Mo My. I feel like the run 2 starts back. The most recent start was washed off the turf. Don't hold that one against this 4-year-old filly. The run 2 back, I think, fits really well in here from a number standpoint, from a running style standpoint. I maintain this is one of those weird things. I wrote about it the other day on Racing Picks. I shouldn't even say weird. I mean, the pace situations in New York have become comical, where even in a turf sprint, I have no idea how fast they're actually going to go. So I think this is a horse who can stay reasonably close to the front end here. Doesn't have to have the lead by any stretch, but I think she just fits really well. And again, you're not looking at any kind of great shakes at 2-1, but I think she is among the most likely winners of the race, if not outright the most likely winner. So I decided to go with her, and hopefully we get off to a formful start and maybe can catch a price later on.
I agree about most likely winner, but I will put up two long shots to talk about. I thought that number 7, Ava K's Girl, was interesting coming off a bit of a trip last time out. And I felt like the race before that was too far, logical, and a great price right now. I'm surprised to see as high as 8-1 on Ava K's Girl, so I don't mind that one. Mm-hmm. And then just as a much bigger price, but one to maybe reach for or put somewhere in the mix, the 11 Canarsie Angel. I thought there was a chance this one could be the speed of the speed on the drop. And again, big number there at 23-1. But in terms of likely winners, I'm with you with Mo Me Mo My. I might mess around with these, and hopefully we can get things off to a winning start here. And if you're going to be playing in the contest, you got to hustle. Horseplayers.com. And if you miss this week or you're listening to this on the replay, you can get involved next week. I think you're going to be on vacation for a couple of weeks with other work, Matt, but I'll figure out a way to put together a Horse Players Happy Hour show. Folks can know. It's always going to be tweeted from Breeders' Cup Twitter and then promoted elsewhere on their social media, or you'll find it through my social media, at Looms Boldly. It'll be a Thursday or a Friday. Next week, I think it'll be a Friday. We've got Keeneland opening day. That might be a fun one. Maybe we could even show some Win and You're In Breeders' Cup action live, and we'll be talking about Breeders' Cup Win and You're In races as the show goes on today amidst the various races in this contest, which begin right now with race 7 at Belmont. And then we'll go straight on to Santa Anita. Do you know how many minutes there are to the next Santa race, Matt?
It's a good question. Hang on. I can effort on the fly. Here we go. Pulling up things. It's nice that Santa Anita is back in the mix. It feels like it's been eons since we've been able to talk about the great race place. I have listed the second race just went off. So we probably have about 25 minutes until the first race for our contest anyway is concerned.
Perfect. So we'll dive into some Breeders' Cup win and you're in action right after this race at Belmont. We'll follow this one to conclusion. We'll see if it ends up going in the formful direction of Mo Me, Mo My, or one of my long shots can potentially get up there in the mix to spice things up, the 7 and the 11. But both of our top pick number 9 as they pop from the gate for this race at Belmont. And looks like a big price got out there a little bit loose early on. I wonder if they're really cooking here.
I was going to say, broke very, very sharp, went right to the top, which frankly, I mean, I would much rather see that than some ridiculously early. By the way, your 11 took a ton of money late, down to 13-1. Somebody must have been listening and they pounded the course.
Either that or just looking at the pace figures. But either way, I'll take the credit.
I mean, I think you and I, you know, talking about the 9 horse, I can't complain right now. If she's not good enough, that's fine. But I mean, she's within 2.5 lengths of the lead. She's perched in the clear. I would have signed up for this in a heartbeat at the start of the race.
Yes, if there was in-running betting, certainly Mo Me, Mo My would be shorter than the 5-2 she was when the gates pop. But under a little bit of pressure now, let's see what we get from her and from Canarsie Angel here, making a nice little run for the money, making a bid towards the lead with the 48-1 still hanging tough in there. Canarsie Angel trying to pull clear, waiting to see what else is coming. Here comes the 5 to try to make it a race. If the 5 can switch leads, if the 5 can hang, 5 ain't going to hang. 5 switches eventually and goes on by. And it looks like we're going to come 5-11 in that course with the blinkers back there. Who was the winner? Were we sleeping on anything on this one? Should we have had this horse in the mix?
Mike Maker continues to just cruise along. He's winning races at a tremendous clip this year. This is a giant turn back in distance. I heard Maggie Wolfendale talking while the horses were in the paddock. She had mentioned that she thought this horse, despite coming out of the mile in the 16th race up at Saratoga and basically route races for the majority of her career, she felt like this was a smaller filly who looked better fit for these sort of shorter races, and a good call on her part. I mean, again, this isn't meant to be shade at anyone else that's involved as far as the way, you know, sort of the paddock pre-race prattle stuff. Maggie's the best. I don't really have much hesitation saying that. And she smoked this one out very, very handily. So 3-1. I mean, it's a horse that I probably wouldn't have touched at 3-1. I liked our position. Horse just wasn't good enough. But 3-1 over, a good call on you there with the 11 horse at 13-1 to run second. Yeah,
nice ride by both Jose Lescano on the winner there, Sky Snow, and also Dylan Davis. Definitely gets credit for making the most of that tactical foot of Canarsie Angel. A little bit of luck could have got it done in that spot. And that's a great note about Maggie. Again, there's plenty of people who do a good job talking about things, but I mean, she's special, and it's always great getting a chance to listen to her. Her JK Plus One was a great interview, and I've had the pleasure of interviewing her many times. Right after she started, a couple months into her job, I remember interviewing her for Horse Player magazine back in the day. Long before the place with the letters was even in the mix for me, and just it was like a masterclass in paddock analysis. Something that I enjoy looking at horses, but she's got a way of bringing like the jargon to life that makes it not jargon, that makes it really actionable information for horse players. And good on her for getting that one. I will frequently, if I'm in position to listen, throw in a horse on her say so or fade one on her say not. So I'm glad you brought that up. Should we talk about some of this racing tomorrow? We've got a very, very interesting array of races. And a lot of this action happening out at Santa Anita Park. Let me just take a minute to organize my brain about which races we want to do longer pieces on.
Sure.
So I get that organized in myself. And I'll just ask you generically before we begin, which of these races are you the most looking forward to personally from a sport point of view?
I mean, from a sport point of view, I guess you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it and say the big race is probably the one that's going to be most important for the big one in 5 weeks' time, as far as the classic is concerned, with the Awesome Again, sort of the on paper showdown between the Baffert runners and Maximum Security and Improbable. I'm always excited to see the first time two turns with the 2-year-olds and what could potentially be down the road. And I know maybe shame on me for always having that sort of wandering eye looking at next year's Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks, but I'm always excited to look at the 2-year-olds and see what sort of the prospects are for some of these runners going forward. And from a gambling standpoint, there's a turf race that I'm really intrigued with. So for me, the entire card at Santa Anita from a stakes standpoint kind of runs the gambit. I get a little bit of everything in there, but I think probably, if we're being honest, the headliner has to be the Awesome Again to see what the two big boys are going to do and ultimately how that shakes down.
Certainly two of the top four in the betting, if there was, and there is overseas, anti-post betting for the Breeders' Cup Classic. We'll get there. Let's start at the beginning. You'd mentioned about the two-year-olds, and this is one we'll go over very quickly, and honestly, I'm not sure how much there really is to say about it, but race number three is the Grade Two Chandelier. Two-year-olds, a mile and a 16th. Do you see anything getting anywhere near Princess Noor in this spot, Matt?
The only thing I'll say is... I thought Varda ran much better than maybe the numbers would suggest. And again, this is one of those fun exercises where depending on which speed figures you sort of, I don't want to say trust, but which ones you use as opposed to other ones, there's a rather large discrepancy with the two that I use, the Timeform US figures and the Bayer speed figures. Timeform US would suggest Varda ran considerably faster than Bayer would in that career debut. Now, you need to decide which side you want to land on. Do you believe the Bayer number or do you believe the Timeform rating? Because if you believe the Timeform rating, I think there's a real scenario where Varda clears to the front. And that number is not that far off of what Princess Noor did. And I recognize Princess Noor was geared down for the final eighth of a mile. But I was intrigued enough with the debut effort from Varda to give her a look in here to try to upset Princess Noor. I tweeted it after the race in that Del Mar debutante. She should have been disqualified. I that's my opinion. I won't change my thought on that. Princess Noor should have come down. But the point is, she was fantastic. And she's got the pedigree that would suggest two turns is going to be right in her wheelhouse. If she wins at 1-5, I'm not going to be surprised in the slightest. But if I was trying to take a shot against, I'd go with the three Varda.
You make a compelling case. I do think that Princess Noor is going to be tough. As I don't disagree with you about the DQ there, but it doesn't. It's one of these weird things where, even though it did affect other horses, I don't know that it ultimately. I don't downgrade her in terms of her ability for the run. But this drifting at the start. The start is obviously. I mean, it's amazing that you even have to say this out loud. But the start's a very important part of the race.
Well, and I know folks look at it and they say, oh, well, you know, if you start making calls like that, then you start getting into the weeds of, you know, what is interpreted as potentially affecting the outcome and X, Y, and Z. The only reason I'm so adamant about that, and I tried to throw that sort of caveat in there, is it's not just because I bet on the horse that she more or less cleaned out. She was a speed horse who her game was to go out there and set the fractions. And when you effectively clean out that horse, not only do you take her out of the race, but you change the entire complexion of it.
100%.
And for me, that's just it's a tough pill to swallow from a gambling standpoint. But I recognize, to your point, I don't know, even if my filly had every opportunity to run, I still don't know that it would have made a difference, but she never had a chance to do what she's capable of. So, you know, that's just my two cents on that. Doesn't have any effect on this race here on Saturday.
We'll see what happens in that one. We'll production meeting in the middle of the show, and this is as much for the benefit of producer Craig as anybody else, because we'll do a deeper dive, a deeper sub-5-minute dive on the Rodeo Drive coming right up, and I'll bring it in so he can snip it out nicely. Race number 7 on Saturday at Santa Anita is the Grade 1 Rodeo Drive, mile and a quarter on the turf. This is a win, and you're in race for the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. I think a lot of eyes are going to go to number 6, Lady Prancelot, in here. I'm very interested in a potential upsetter in the form of number 3, Bodhicitta, in this spot, who I think is going to be very well suited for this mile and a quarter test. And I also think is going to be in a little bit better position early and have an opportunity to get the jump potentially on Lady Prancelot and all the rest. I was very interested, not exactly going with a huge price at 5-2 on the morning line, but one that might be able to spring the mild upset. I could see Lady Prancelot potentially even getting bet down off that 2-1. How do you see this year's Rodeo Drive, Matt?
I've been a huge fan of Bodhicitta for a while. Anybody that's followed my analysis over on Racing Picks, I think I've picked her in each of the past two starts, the Gamely as well as the Yellow Ribbon. She kicks like a mule. That's the way that I've kind of coined it. And it's because she just has an unbelievable turn of foot at the end. And I think that's one of those things that people get too hung up on class. When a horse can kick like that, I don't care if they're going from N1X to N2X or to Grade 2 or Grade 3 company. If you can kick, you're in with a chance. I just thought she was going to take too much money, and I was more intrigued with the filly drawn just to her outside. The number four, Mucho Unusual, I think has excuses for each of the past three starts. And maybe I'm getting a little bit overzealous in trying to draw up some sort of a narrative where she takes another step forward here. The run three back in the game lead in which Bodasiga ran second behind Keeper of the Stars. Mucho Unusual was rolling. It was just stuck behind a wall of horses. Unfortunately, got out too late, came with that late bid. Think it's better than looks. The Jenny Wiley, we've talked about this with a few horses at this point. Rushing fall, you know, Jolie Olympica, no pace signed on that day. It was going to be impossible for Mucho Unusual to try to run those girls down. And then in that most recent start, I'm sure this is the one that's going to turn a lot of people off, the Solana Beach. I think she just made a premature move. And you take a look and see the chart. I know it was only five horses. I know they're Calbreds. But the race was won by the last and second to last place runners at the top of the lane. Basically, the last move was the winning move. And I think she just moved a little bit too early. The mile and a quarter is not going to be an issue for her. And I think, to your point, talking about from a tactical standpoint, she's going to be ahead of Lady Prancelot. I think she may even be ahead of Bodacito when it's all said and done. Mucho Unusual, I think, is better than what the paper would suggest at this point. And I think I'm going to get a much better price than I would on Bodacita. I love her. I think she's the most likely winner. But Mucho Unusual, I think, is a more appealing price. And I think she has a big chance.
Let's touch on Lady Prancelot for a minute. I wouldn't rule out by any means, but I'm just not sure about the kind of trip she's going to get in here at the price she's going to be. Would she be one you'd be considering for a backup?
I mean, I think she's among the likelier winners. I'm just concerned, always going to be concerned about that sort of running style where, A, she is a deep one-run type of closer, but also I don't know that she's even the horse with the best late kick in this race, talking about Bodacita. I think Bodacita probably has as good, if not better, turn of foot, and she's probably going to have a length or two head start on a horse like Lady Prancelot. So that, to me, becomes a difficult proposition to really take a short price on when, A, I don't even think you're the best closer in the race, and B, the horse I think is going to close better than you is going to have a head start on you. That's a tough pill for me to swallow if I'm trying to draw up a narrative where she wins.
I think it's worth discussing number two, Maxim Ray 2. Really interesting booking with Luis Saez, and interesting to look at some closing sectionals that aren't too far off the best of what Bodacita and Lady Prancelot typically lay down. Do you give Maxim Ray any count, and where do you think Saez is going to have this one positioned?
You know, fascinating that this is a kind of filly who can win at a mile and three eighths and win at a mile. I mean, that's there aren't many horses that have that capability. Now, we're obviously talking about the toughest company that she's faced to date. I would imagine this is going to be a horse who's probably going to be, I don't want to say mid-flight, maybe just in front of mid-flight. I know on the turn back that seems counterintuitive, but I think this is a horse who can be within two or three lengths of the front end. And that could be a big, big difference maker as far as the tactics are concerned. If you can get the jump, like we just talked about, on horses like Lady Prancelot and Bodacita, maybe even Mucho Unusual, Maxim Rate, I think, is interesting. I don't know that she's necessarily fast enough to win a race like this, but I could see her possibly getting a piece of this thing.
We'll see how it plays out. That's going to be Bodacita, the three for me, and the four, Mucho Unusual for Matt, in the Win and You're In race, Rodeo Drive, Grade 1, Santa Anita's seventh race on Saturday. And let's move things right along with another Win and You're In race that I think we can pause and do a little bit deeper of a dive on. Mile and a 16th on the dirt, the two-year-olds in the Grade 1 American Pharaoh. It goes as race number 8, of course, a key prep and Win and You're In race for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And I'm going to let you kick this one off, Matt. Where are your eyes drawn in this spot?
Pete, I had a really hard time because some of the horses in here, I'm just not entirely sure what their ceiling is. I don't know where they really fit in. You've got a number of horses moving over from the grass. You've got some horses who are taking on winners for the first time. I had a difficult time. I feel like many people are going to look at it, and perhaps it is as simple as Spielberg. Maybe he's just going to go to the front, and he's just going to win because it's Baffert, and that's fine. I'm not going to really argue with that because I don't have a strong opinion. The only other horse I found mildly intriguing, and I don't know if maybe this isn't going to be the time. Maybe he's going to be the type of horse that needs some more seasoning before he really gets it all together. I thought Waspirant on the outside, the number 8, was mildly intriguing. I don't know if he can win this race, but for him to break his maiden the way that he did, it felt like he just got the engine cooking. His first time going out to two turns, which I don't think is a small feat for these two-year-olds. Many of them, I think the vast majority of the field outside of the turf runners, haven't gone two turns yet. Waspirant has done so. The blinkers go on. This has not been a positive move for John Sheriffs over the past 5 years. First time blinkers, 1 for 24 with a minuscule ROI. But I think the idea is you're just trying to figure this horse out, where maybe this race isn't going to be the end all be all, but maybe this is a learning experience for him against better horses. You can see the pedigree. Obviously, he'll want to run all day by Union Rags out of a Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic winner, and Life is Sweet. He was the only one I thought would be interesting at a bit of a price. Frankly, I don't know if he's good enough to win a spot like this, but maybe he's the long-term play in a race like this.
Interesting points all around. And Spencer Lugenbuehl, the host of Red Board Rewind over on our RacingPicks.com Players Podcast, also made the Wasperin point. And despite that negative stat about the blinkers, I still do feel like in the hands, the patient hands of John Sheriffs, this is one whose scope for improvement is certainly significant. But I will go ahead and make the less interesting case for Spielberg. This one, I feel like it's so obvious, but he's just poised to break the maiden. Very happy not to see Dr. Scheivel, who's a real horse, not reopposing. The thing that that makes me like Spielberg here is the way that he looks in his races, in that I don't think he's a quickener. He's a grinder. And I think that could play to his advantage going farther in this race, because I just don't think there's that much late kick. I think Saez is also going to suit this one very well, if not near the lead, if not on the lead, going to make the others work hard. And if I saw some horses with, you know, who got home better, I might be a little more interested in trying to beat Spielberg. Spielberg's going to be all over my tickets in this spot. And I'm curious to see what this horse has. I mean, not brilliant the way some of these Baffert two-year-olds are, but in a funny way, I could see that playing to his advantage in this spot. At the end of the day, is Spielberg one you would consider using defensively, or are you just against the one who's likely to be a significant favorite in here?
No, I think he's the most likely winner, so I wouldn't say I'm against him by any stretch, simply because you brought up the fact that, you know, from a pedigree standpoint, it feels like distance is only going to be his friend. He goes out for Baffert's Barn, and Baffert typically has his two-year-olds ready to roll, and despite the fact that he doesn't have that sort of brilliance that we're accustomed to seeing from some of the Baffert two-year-olds, I think he's going to make the front, and I've talked about it ad nauseum. Two-turn races at Santa Anita, you better be on the lead or pretty darn close to it, or there needs to be a supersonic pace signed on for you to try to rally into it. So I think he's going to have the run of the race. The question is he good enough? And to be honest, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be good enough to win in a spot like this.
Quick thought on number four, Notable Exception, shipping in from Arlington. That's kind of interesting in and of itself. Do you give this one any count in this year's Grade One American Pharoah?
If he's anything near his 7-2 morning line, no, I want no part of him. I think this is one of those prove it situations to me. I've read some news and analysis from Southern California that would suggest this horse is possibly sitting on tilt and ready to go. I thought his debut was fine, but it was against inferior company. It was on synthetic. He did learn a lot, I think. You know, it was a bit of an intriguing trip where he was a little bit slow in his stride. He was pushed up, moved up into a contending position, then sort of dropped back. He was down on the rail throughout. He ran fine, but I'm of the opinion, especially again, at that 3.5-1 on the morning line, if he's anything near that, he's an entire fade for me. And I want to say, prove it. If you're good enough, great. I'll tip my cap and move on to the next race. But if you told me he'd be 15-1, maybe I'd be intrigued. But at the price, he's strictly a sit back and watch play.
We'll see how it plays out in the Grade One American Pharoah. I'm going with Spielberg and Matt digging Wasperant on the outside. I noticed that the first race of the Stronic Five is off. We're back to Horse Player Happy Hour and Stronic Five happening at the same time. So okay. I'm slightly distracted by that here, watching the heavy favorite, Jackson Traveler, traveling well indeed on the front end as they turn for home. This even money West Point horse for Steve Asmussen, who looks like he has put the sword to this field. We tried to get a little bit cute and spread in our Stronic Five show bets, but it was as simple as single and move on, which I'm sure a lot of people did. It does get an A home for us in those Stronic Five tickets, but not exactly the result that we were looking for there. You know, speaking of creative bets, I do want to put in a shout out for the Golden Hour Double and Golden Hour Pick Four that are going to be happening every racing day that Santa Anita and Golden Gate are both running. On one of the other shows, on the Racing Pick show, I go in depth in that same conversation with Spencer, actually, about those two bets. The Golden Hour Double, which was there the last meet with its $5 minimum. And they have this Pick Four with the dollar minimum, which I think is actually really interesting. We'll see how the dynamics play out. But you can obviously get that much more coverage than in a bet like the Stronach 5 with the extra leg and the dollar minimum. So something that folks should consider taking a look at. And this week's Golden Gate races, at least for the Saturday cards, they seemed approachable to me in a way that made me a little bit more excited about playing the bet. Is that something you were planning on taking a look at potentially?
Well, actually, I was going to shout it out if you hadn't, simply because I think it is. I like changes. I like things that are, you know, not, I don't want to say cookie cutter, but not by the book. And I get it. Maybe some traditionalists will look at it and go, I don't want to play two different tracks and you're changing up the minimum for the wager and yada, yada, yada. Well, changing up the minimum for the wager, I think, is a good thing. I chatted about it on my show a couple weeks ago with the Kentucky Derby, and I recognize probably most of the 10-cent super change had to do with, you know, given that there aren't people there or whatever the case may be in the lines, you don't want to be bogging down windows with 10-cent supers. But there's still something. There was a reason that dollar superfecta was so enticing. And yes, it was going to be, perhaps a giant spend for some folks. But the people that were arguing, saying, well, you can still play it for a dollar, that's missing the point. You know, it's diluting the pool because you can afford so much more. I use $24 as the example. My $24 for 10 cents goes so much farther, literally 10 times farther than it does for the dollar. So I like the idea of occasionally throwing, and it's what makes the Stronach 5 such a great bet. Low takeout, the dollar minimum. It's why we've seen as many carryovers as we have, where, you know, in a sort of traditional pick five with a 50-cent base, those wagers wouldn't have carried over. With the dollar, though, it makes it that much more intriguing. And I commend everybody out at the Stronach Group for giving this thing a shot.
What I really love is the willingness Stronach have shown to listen to horse players. The story I've heard, and we'll get it confirmed, was that it was more or less of a brainstorming session out in the world famous Eddie Logan suite with participants, including Nate Newby, who obviously does such a great job catering to horse players because he is one himself. Can say the same thing about Tom Quigley out there. Aiden Butler, apparently very interested in what horse players have to say and comes from a gambling background, understands the punting side of the equation as well. And then a couple of the other Eddie Logan regulars, including Leo Vukmanovic and Florin Sima, two accomplished contest players, who I'm proud to call friends as well, were involved in the conversation. And they want to hear what horse players have to say and use some of our ideas to bring in some of that new blood you're talking about, Matt. So as we always say in this game, you vote with your dollar. And when we can support bets that we like, I'd much rather do that than complain about things that we don't like. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and that's the thing too. And I mean, I'll credit Jonathan for talking about this. This is one of those things where, okay, you have a body who is willing to try something. You now need to support it. You know, we can complain and you know, I got to filter myself before I say anything too bad. But the idea of everybody likes the belly ache.
Don't get canceled. Don't get
exactly.
Canceled.
Everybody likes the belly ache. Well, now, you know, people are listening and they're making changes. The way to prove that's actually what you want is by supporting the wager. And it's as simple as that.
Good stuff, Matt. All right. We've got 4 minutes to race three at Santa Anita Park. We can loop back, actually, and I have to get to the right screen. I'm screen challenged today. Let's take a look at how many, what are we playing for over in the Horse Players Contest? That's what I'm trying to ascertain. How many seats are we going to be giving away for?
Top 8.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's good. We got a good number this week. That's great. Yes. I wonder if that's, one of these days, I got to actually look at this data and see if we can figure out what generates. I mean, I'm sure having Santa Anita back and the late on a Friday, true happy hour, I think a lot of people can, you know, hopefully wrap their work week and then chill and have a great time with us. But that's good to see. We're going to file that away that we happen to do so well. And we might as well run through the eight who are currently in that position. And then we'll take a quick look at the Santa Anita race as well. Can I read that writing, though? It becomes the real question. Yes, I can. We've got obviously a giant tie. I wasn't thinking about that with the 1270. But I'll just go ahead and read the first people listed. Daniel Lucero, CJ Arrigo, whose name we've seen a lot on these leaderboards, Kevin Nunez, Joe Rogers, Eric Engelman, Alexa Zepp, fresh off a big win on Horse Players or Horse Tourneys, I think it was, last week. I've been trying to get her on the show, and she's been crazy busy, so it hasn't been easy. But we're going to keep working on that. Our buddy Lou Mazzarelli from Windstar Stablemates, he's been on the shows. Always great to have him on. Somebody's at my door.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, why don't you read the list and start talking about the Santa race? I'll be right back. That might be my wife locked out, which would be a great moment in Horse Player Happy Hour history to put for our clip reel. I'll be right back.
I'm going to pivot from going through simply because the folks that had the runner-up at the 11 horse in that most recent run, they're at 1240. They're only 30 cents behind. So effectively, you're looking at the top 21 people who have $12.40 or greater, and I don't mean any disrespect to anyone, and it's not a matter of me not wanting to read them all off. It's just I don't really have the time to read 21 names off this thing. If you're playing in the Stronach 5, we're taking a look at the ninth at Gulfstream as they're getting ready to turn and hit the top of the lane. Meanwhile, out at Santa Anita, you've just got a few minutes to post. I believe they're just going to hang tight until this race is concluded here, this part of the Stronach 5. So, again, for those of you that missed it, the top eight are going to win a $179 entry into tomorrow's BCBC qualifier. The top two non-winners, you will get your $20 breakage back. It looks like inside out at Gulfstream Park, the number six horse is going to prevail there in the ninth. So if you're playing the Stronach 5, hopefully you're still alive. Looks like a wet one down there in South Florida. PTF is back. Did you guys have the six at Gulfstream?
This is one of these funny things that I actually have to look it up. No, skunked. We did it.
Got through down on the inside.
Unbelievable. No sixes. What price was this horse?
I can't tell you. I don't know for certain. I can take a
I'll dig it up. Susan was not locked out, by the way. It was simply my child being obnoxious. How funny is that?
You were looking at a 5-1 shot, down from 15-1 on the line, though. So I don't know if that had to do with a wet track or whatever the case may be. But Captivant is your winner.
And I whiffed on that one. It's tough. We finally got one last week. It did not pay very well. But I tell you, on these Stronach 5 shows we've been doing, Matt Dinnerman is the lucky charm. Because the first time he was on, he ended up giving, it was in a spread, but he only mentioned like three, ended up giving a horse that paid $52. And then the second time he comes on, we finally give away a winning sequence over there. We do that show every week. And it was fun this week. We had JK back on. He's been obviously crazy busy and readjusting to life. And it was great to have him back on the airwaves. Who knows? We may even get him. He's on Fox today. But we may even get him back for a Horse Player Happy Hour next week, which would be fun. It's not easy to replace you, Matt, when you have these other these other engagements. I have to say, it'll be good to. But I think he can fill the shoes.
It's going to be like one of those, like a wrestling match, tag team match. Just slap, swap in, one's in, one's out.
It works for me. It's great. I mean, the concept of this show is great. I'm going to try next week. I'm going to try to get things as under control. This was a crazy busy Friday afternoon because of the teaching day. Maybe next week I'll see if I can have Susan do the teaching on Friday, knock everything out in the morning, and I can actually, you know, get a little loose like we used to on these shows. With the work week behind me, it's you know, it's not as much fun here drinking my healthy shake as it is as it is having a few beers on Horse Player Happy Hour. But all right, we've got to be very close to Santa Anita.
They are in the gate and they are off.
Okay, well there you go. Did you get a chance to tell people what you played in here? If not, you can tell us now.
I can tell you now, I went with the eight horse in here about our time. I bet the horse as well. Broke a little bit on the slow side. Actually coming in from the Midwest, this is a horse who ran most recently at Remington, two starts back, ran a Lone Star. You know, maybe you were dealing with a class situation where it's not going to work. But at the same time, this horse ran into Share the Upside, who's a really nice horse for Steve Asmussen. And I thought the price was right in here. Now, again, from this position, frankly, I don't love where I'm at, but, you know.
You might be running. At least you're not blocked. We'll see. We're going to know in a hurry here. You are going to give up a couple lengths around this turn and have to be pretty good. But, you know, any excuse to play turf form shipping west, it doesn't look like you're going to kick
hanging
in.
Hanging on the lead, yeah.
Is it going to be the seven to run down the five who is clear? It would appear to be down to those two, and I think the five is going to just fold.
Five is going to hang on, so that is Psycho Dar for Steve Miotti, if I'm seeing that correctly. Yeah, Big Gray. I think Steve Miotti is a great trainer. I think he does great work. Interesting enough, I mean, this is one of those spots where you take a look at this horse. It had been running in the N1X condition seemingly forever. Couldn't get through it, and then finally sniffs open claiming company, and bang, there you go at 6-1. I mean, it's. I think that's you know, I'm always going to be someone who is more intrigued with, and I said it earlier when we were talking about the Rodeo Drive, you know, with turf races, I'm much more interested in how fast they kick as opposed to necessarily the company they've been keeping. I can say the same thing with speed figures. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it goes back to Andy Beyer when he was first starting to make his figs and writing, picking winners and all these sort of things. You know, I don't care if the horse has been running in graded stakes races and this one's coming out of an allowance race. This horse is 10 points faster. It's going to be very difficult for the other horse to win. In this instance, I think class does matter. I mean, this is the first time this horse has had a chance to breathe outside of restricted company. And I say restricted meaning, you know, protected. And there you go. You've got a winner. So maybe that sounds like red boarding. I was never going to have the horse, but good on you if you did. You're going to get $14.
Let's talk about this Belmont race very quickly as they're going into the gate. I was going to try to beat the big fave here. I used Unrelenting Force, who I thought maybe had a chance to wire the field. Flow Move Up coming out of the last couple, square price. Bourbon Bay, very logical, lower end of the odds spectrum. And then a bomb, a stinger to juice up the gimmicks underneath. Farragut, I felt like has improved in the last couple of outings and could get somewhere at 17-1 right now. 7.85 for me. What did you think of this one?
Look, hopefully we're both seeing it right here because I went with Unrelenting Force as well, hoping that this horse can shake clear. It's a sneaky turn back going from a mile and an eighth to a one turn mile. You don't typically think of that as sort of a turn back in distance, but that's what you have here. And I think there's a chance that we're dealing with controlling speed. I mean, has got red fractions as far as the time form US pace ratings are concerned in each of the past two, comes out of a pretty live race in the grand scheme of things. You've got two next out winners coming out of that. I'm just hopeful that Manny is on a send mission, try to go to the front. If it doesn't work, that's fine, but I'd rather find out on the lead.
I would agree with those tactics. Blackjack Davey ends up being odds on in this spot. I wonder, the horse certainly makes sense, but to be that price makes me wonder if there's some sort of story around the thing. We do end up right on the lead. Got to be happy with that. I didn't see the exact break. I was watching the favorite
very
down
clean
on the rail. But yeah, it looks. I mean, if we lose from there, we lose from there. But we're certainly getting what we're getting the trip that we wanted. And it'll be interesting to see. I'd love him to continue to try to press his advantage and be aggressive here, rather than let this pack totally catch up with him and make his life difficult. But we'll see. 23-4 for that opening quarter here in this eighth race at Belmont Park.
This is that's sort of the move that I call the Brian Hernandez from the Fort Larned ride in the Classic, where keep everyone tight and then try to open it up, try to get that separation rounding the far turn. Now look, Manny's still moving pretty well. I would still love him to kind of open this thing up if he can.
Yeah,
because
now's the time.
Now's the time, and I don't know that he's got the horse to do it, or maybe it's just a very confident ride, one of the two, but he's moving very well. We'll find out if he's got that much horse left.
Yeah, he's moved his hands a little bit, and I think the horse is picking up, but yeah, cut and go. I mean, let's say now he's giving it what he's got, and let's see. It's looks like Bourbon Bay has a chance to run him down, but if this rail's okay and we can find, he's maybe trying to herd a little bit there, which, of course, is a – always allowed in New York. It looks like it's going to come 8-7 if we can, as long as we don't stop and let
say, hang on
five for come and get us. Yeah, let's see this 87 right to the wire.
All right,
8-7 and the four, and then my long shot ends up fourth. So I, you know, that's one of those things. You bet it right, you could do okay, and I think we were on the right horse. Who? What did they did that? Seemed like the type that would probably get hit late. So I didn't see
little
what
bit.
The last flash was
seven. What?
Okay. I mean,
not egregious.
Yeah, that's still within the realm of value. Yeah. And, you know, on a different racetrack, the horse probably wins. You know, and I'm not saying that this track isn't unfair, but speed, when you're a speed horse on the dirt, well, maybe this used to be a lot more true 2 years ago, but it seemed like you could get a lot of rides like that where you'd hang on a little bit more when tracks seemed to be a little bit more tilted towards speed. The fact of the matter is those tracks were probably more unfair. This track is probably more fair. So I'm not complaining, but I'm just saying, I don't feel bad about the pick. That's what I'm trying.
I know this is also a dangerous piece to bring up simply because we've seen all the issues with timing over the past, let's call it 6 months. If the clock is to be believed, you know, when I was talking about hopefully trying to get some of that separation, if the clock's to be believed, the second quarter was 23 flat. So maybe it wasn't a matter of not wanting to do that. It was just that everyone was running at that point. And again, you can go back and try to, you know, Monday morning or Friday afternoon quarterback the whole thing. But I think if you believe the clock, if the clock is accurate, I mean, that a 23-second quarter going a mile, that's a testing split for anybody. So yes. good on Manny for doing – look, he did what – you can't complain about that. We went out there, it worked out, and I just got run down and beat by a better horse today.
Also, when you see him that tired where there was even like that 1 second where you were worried about him not even hanging on for – both of us were a little worried about not even hanging on for a second. I think it's tough to say, oh, he could have more aggressive. I think more aggressive and he just finishes farther back. There's a little bit of a threading the needle aspect of it, and it's something I'd love to talk to a rider more about at some point. You know, we come up with these theories as horse players. It's always lovely to get the cross reference of talking to somebody who sits on their back. I think it was a great ride. I think he got beat by a better one on the day who had a little bit better trip. And, you know, I feel good that we steered people off the even money favorite who does not end up in the top four.
And to your point, that final quarter was effectively 26 seconds. I mean, they were all crawling home.
Yeah, it was. That's one of those things. See, that to me is the advantage of the aggressive ride early is that even the closers go too fast. So even they can get gassed.
Yep.
You know, no surprise that John Velasquez with the clock in his head comes up with the perfect ride and is able to finish even under that pace situation. That might be it for our live racing on the show. In fact, it will be it for our live racing on the show because we don't have, you know, we're only scheduled to go here for another 13 minutes.
Yeah.
And as much as I'd love to hang out, I got a ton of work to do still. This teaching, man, it makes the weeks, it makes you have to guard your time more, but we still have plenty of winning you're in action from Saturday. And what I say we do is roll through the rest of these. If you're game for this, we'll roll through the rest of these Saturday winning you're ins at Santa Anita. We'll loop back to talk about the winning you're in race at Belmont. And then we'll go from there. So I think that's the move. I unfortunately haven't looked. There is Sunday winning you're in action too. You haven't looked at any of that yet, have you?
I have not. I cannot
me neither. Me neither. I'll be, you could, folks can find, you'll be doing videos or writing for racingpicks.com for that.
The Sunday will be written analysis. Yes.
Great. So your thoughts will be there. I might tweet some stuff out or write something over at thetheraces.com. If you follow me on Twitter though, you know, I don't want to fake that. We'll do that in due time, but I know we have both looked pretty thoroughly at race number 9 at Santa Anita on Saturday, the Grade 2 John Henry for 3 and up, going a mile and a quarter on the turf. Win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup turf. I'll just ask you what I think is the central question of the race to get us started here, Matt. Are you with United or against him?
Well, so when I first went through the race, I said, well, United probably is just the best horse. Simply put, he's going to win. And I went through and looked at that Del Mar handicap again. And I said, you know, I don't really, there's nobody else in there coming out of that race that I'm really that terrified of. I like Originaire, but he's very difficult to trust just given how far back he is. And then I did a little bit more homework and searching. And this is going to be another example, we've talked about it, of is your eye telling you the truth or are the numbers telling you the truth? Because based on my eye, Salvatore Mundi has a giant chance to win this race on the stretch out and distance. He's in razor sharp form for Phil D'Amato. And if you haven't seen it or anybody who's listening and you want to take another look, go back and watch that win in the N1X most recently out at Del Mar, August 22nd. He could not have been more impressive. He absolutely blitzed that field from a beautiful stalking position. He never looked like a loser at any point. He could have won by 5 instead of 2.5. I don't know if it's going to translate to a mile and a quarter against better horses. But that's the sort of visually impressive effort that I'm looking for when I want to try to build a case for a horse who on paper looks overmatched against the horses with more credentials and sort of more accomplishments. Salvatore Mundi is where I'm going to go, acknowledging that United is the most likely winner by far. But I think Salvatore Mundi, if my eye is not deceiving, I think he's in with a big chance.
We see it exactly the same way. And this is the horse I want. Very similar thought process to what you said. It was looking back through the form of United's last race and saying, I can't support the group from that day against them. What about this interesting stranger? And the visual impression last time, as you point out, extremely strong from Salvatore Mundi. And you know, he's definitely behind United on figures, but he's not crazy behind when you factor in that he's going to be positioned ahead. And United, we're talking before about grinders, more of a grinder, not really a quickener. I just feel like when the real running starts at the pace call, Salvador Mundi's going to have a head start that could make up those, you know, whatever you have him as, 5, 6, 8 speed figure points that separate him, United and Salvador Mundi. I feel like the pace dynamic here alone could make the difference. I think we're on the right horse. I hope we get all the 6-1. We'll have to see. Who else do you think is going to take money in here? Can you make cases for any of the others?
I mean, United, obviously, based on that most recent start, was 3-5 in an 11-horse field, and that was a horse that featured Red King, who is in great form for the, you know, for his connections. Originaire, I wonder if people are going to look at that trip, go back to the Del Mar handicap. There was a spot at the top of the lane where Abel Cedillo had to, he didn't have to steady, but he had to sort of alter course in a little bit of an awkward fashion. I wonder if people are going to make more of that than, in my opinion, what it was. I don't think it really compromised him that much because eventually he just tipped right out into the clear and he came with his run. But and fully acknowledging, I've been burned by Originaire a million times. I think he has got an unbelievable late kick, but I don't know that I entirely trust him in a spot like this. Outside of those couple, I mean, Next Year's has to be the one that's discussed as far as taking money, because an argument can be made that he's even the class of the field over a horse like United, despite the fact that United finished second in the turf last year. Next Shares is a kind of horse where, frankly, I kind of want to see a good effort from him, maybe not win, and then go back to Keeneland because he's proven himself over the Keeneland turf.
It's an interesting read on Next Shares, and I think you can make that case. I'm concerned about him just potentially being off form. Do you
yes.
think – I mean, that's what gets me. Did you see anything – notably excusable in the Kentucky Downs run, or were you just excusing it because it was Kentucky Downs and it's such a quirky configuration?
Yeah, predominantly. But I usually look at Kentucky Downs and say, look, if a horse doesn't run well there, I'm not going to hold it against him. And conversely, if a horse does run well there, I'm going to say, great. I mean, I don't know that necessarily translates one way or the other. The concern I would have with a horse like this is he's won at Kentucky Downs in the past, and it was a complete non-effort in the most recent start. So maybe right. He is just entirely off form, to your point. And if that's the case, that's fine. But if he shows a little bit of life, I'm not suggesting back him in a spot like this, but if he shows a little bit of life, maybe he at least becomes intriguing, you know, if you are looking for a bomber in a race like the Mile in the Breeders' Cup. Because this is a horse who, again, he's run well. He's won grade ones. It's not like he's a complete no-hoper in some spots like this. And he's run really well at Keeneland in the past. And that's something that I don't think should go overlooked.
He certainly stepped up and won at big numbers before. And I do like to try to keep horses like that on side when you can. So I'll definitely second that idea. At the top of the show, you said the race you were looking the most forward to was the grade one Awesome Again, which surely on paper and in reality looks like a match between Improbable and Maximum Security. Unless you're being much more creative than I am, who do you like to get the job done in this spot?
It's such a difficult call because, you know, I'm sure if I say something about Maximum Security, some people are going to say, oh, you're a hater, you don't like him. It has nothing to do with that. There's a part of me, though, that thinks Improbable is going to work out a better trip in here because there is other speed. And I think Improbable is more proven off the pace than Maximum Security is. Having said that, I'm not going to be betting the race. This is purely one that I sit back and I watch, I do my homework and see if this is sort of a foreshadowing piece going into the classic here in a few weeks' time. The only sort of curveball I want to throw out there, if you blank out the names of the trainers and the horses and all that jazz, and you just use their most recent running line, and let's just use numbers so everybody knows where we're going with this. The most recent running line, tell me the difference between the race the number 3 horse ran and the race the number 5 horse ran. There's really not a heck of a lot different. I get it. One was at Charlestown versus Del Mar, but you're talking about one horse who's probably going to be 15 times the price of the other one. I'm not sitting here trying to make a case for Sleepy Eyes Todd, but just, you know, we've talked about this in the past, Pete. Maximum Security couldn't have had a better trip in the Pacific Classic. He's going to have a much more difficult time this time around.
It was gifted to him the last time around. And I was just thinking that the trip that I saw Maximum Security getting is why I couldn't get off him. Even though there is other speed, my gut tells me, and you make a great point about just divorcing yourself and looking at just the pure numbers. But it feels to me like Max is going to just be able to dominate that other speed when the real running starts. I don't think they're going to be able to hang around him long enough to bring Improbable's potential closing ability into play. I just think Max is going to blow up the field and go on with it. Now, you got to remember, and I don't even think I'm joking, I believe the one time I ever backed Maximum Security, I was in England, and there was what I thought was like a silly price on him in the only Monmouth race, where he, not the only race he lost, but the only race where he didn't cross the wire first. So I could not be more out of tune with Maximum Security. I was in the market to beat him the last 2 days. Wasn't overly impressed with either and wanted to come back and oppose him here. But it was just one of those things sometimes when you just see a trip, and I just don't see those speeds hanging around enough to be able to trouble him. But we'll see. I'd love to see you be right, and we get to see a real throwdown in the lane between the big two, and then this will have even more important Breeders' Cup Classic implications.
Well, and I guess the other piece too is, I mean, you, like you say, you know, if I'm trying to draw up a scenario where he doesn't necessarily get hooked in a speed duel, say you let Sleepy Eyes Todd go, say you let take the 101 down on the inside go, I mean, what's wrong with taking up the stalking position 3-4 wide in the clear? Meanwhile, Improbable is either in a box or he's too far. You know what I mean? Like, I can totally understand anybody that looks at it and says Maximum Security is just going to win. I think the reason, if I absolutely had to make a pick, and I can't stress this enough before I get any hate mail, it's not that I don't want one or the other to win. I frankly don't care who wins this race. I think it's just going to be something going forward that I want to make note of. I think to date, Improbable has beaten better horses. And that's the only thing. That is genuinely the only piece that I'm using to sort of differentiate the two. I feel like Improbable has defeated better horses than Maximum Security has this year in 2020.
You make a very reasonable case. It's going to be fun to see how it all plays out. I may get involved just depending on, you know, I'm going to draw things up, but I think I have enough of a Max opinion that it's worth me maybe just singling and pressing him up a little bit and trying to get lucky.
What do you think he goes for a price?
I think he's going to be 2-5, 1-2.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that was my thought.
6-5 Improbable, you know, super.
And then everybody
long.
else floats. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to move on, but one more question on this race. What if I've sort of given up the idea that Midcourt is going to show speed. I was very surprised they didn't show speed last time. Thought we might see a rider change. It seemed like such an unusual tactic after the other tactic had come so close to working in the previous race. But just the fact that he's still there makes me think that they were happy with that ride and happy with those tactics, and made me think that Midcourt has absolutely no chance at all.
I mean, the only way he can win the race is to go.
Right.
And I say that about so many of these other races that we've gone over where, you know, you're not as talented as the horses you need to beat. Your only asset is your speed. Use it. Don't try to get cute. Don't try. You're telling me you're going to try to pull the same trip Improbable is, and you're going to beat him on the square. Right. I don't see it. I don't see any scenario where that happens. And that's spotting a horse like Maximum Security a length or two. I mean, if I'm Victor and John Sheriffs, I sit there in the paddock and I go, look, you got one job, make the front at all costs.
And that does sort of change. If he's out there too, I still like Max, but I can't start to think that there's value at 1-2. If we knew Midcourt was going to go, all of a sudden it does. Then my brain starts turning more around to your way of thinking that it might be Improbable who has the edge. It's a fascinating race to watch. And you know, I know myself. I will end up betting. And if there are English associates paying attention and like 3-5 or something on Max, I will bet him.
The last piece on this that I'll throw to you is there, let's say both of the Bafferts lose. Does it affect, and I guess obviously you need to see the circumstances in which they would be defeated. Would it affect your opinion of them going toward the Breeders' Cup as far as in the Classic itself?
I would think so. My gut would say yes. My gut would say they're both supposed to run really well here to be set up to do what I think they're going to want to do next time. But you know, there could be mitigating circumstances in terms of a trip or pace problems or something like that I would give him a free pass. But I mean, certainly a no-show wouldn't be good. It's just not really how Baffert horses don't really have no-shows, you know. Right. Their form line is typically, you know, like this. So it would definitely give me pause if there was something not necessarily a not win, but a no fire would really would disturb me in particular with those two runners. If that makes any sense.
No, I would agree entirely. I mean, it's part of the reason I don't even know what his story is right now. But like a horse like McKenzie, I mean, you couldn't pay me to use him in whatever race he was showing up in next, because he's just been so off form ever since he really in 2020, just in general.
Yeah, it can be very hard, no matter whose hands you're in, to get back when you go off. All right, we are in bonus time, but let's stick with it for another couple minutes if you're game, Max. I do want to talk about the other North American winning you're in on Saturday, the Grade 2 Vosburg at Belmont Park, where we're going 6 furlongs on the dirt. Obviously, key prep for the Breeders' Cup Sprint. How did you see this one?
I mean, I don't really have a strong opinion in here. I guess my opinion is I think the horse that I like the most, I have no idea if this distance is going to work for him. I think Funny Guy is incredibly talented. I think he's the kind of horse that people immediately see and they go, New York bred. You know, he does his best against, you know, restricted company. I think he's just a supremely talented animal. The problem is your guess is as good as mine about 3/4 of a mile. I mean, you're dealing with some proper runners in this spot. And part of me thinks he's more of like a cigar mile type, a one turn miler. But I guess if I absolutely had to make a pick, maybe it would be him. But Firenze Fire is a horse that I think you just want to draw a line through the most recent start. He clearly hasn't done his best running on wet going. And I think the 6 furlongs are going to be just fine for him. Share the Ride is an interesting runner simply because he's got some speed. And, you know, I guess you could make a case that the most interesting horse, the most fascinating one going forward is Engage. Like, what do you get from him in here? Because his best is among the best as far as the sprinters are concerned.
I feel like you're right about Engage. You look at the upside that this one has, and it's immense. I just feel like you got to figure Breezy Sprint is the goal. You got to figure this is a stepping stone. This is a closer in a race that doesn't seem to have a ton of pace for this level going 6. This horse, I just feel like is going to be potentially up against it as one, and not one that I'm interested in as the favorite. You make great points about Funny Guy and his quality, but I feel like this is 6 that, with the way the pace plays out, might play more like 5. I don't know. I think it's going to be too sharp for Funny Guy, and I think if he comes running late, you still he has a big race somewhere, but I don't feel like it's going to be today. The one that I like is Firenze Fire back at Belmont. I just think we'd like to see a little bit more aggression in the way he's ridden in a race that doesn't have too much pace. He's been ridden that way before, though, with great success. So I just want to see, I don't want to see him 4th or 5th early. I want to see him, you know, just off the vanguard. You take out the slop races and you just filter through the lens of Belmont. And I think he might just be better than this group in this spot with Engage, with Funny Guy potentially against it from the distance point of view, and Engage potentially going to fire his best shot next time. The only other one I'd mention, and depending on what the track is doing, True Timber is an interesting horse to potentially make a move to blitz him, coming out of that very fast pace in the forego, where he obviously set it up for a horse coming out, you know, from a million lengths out of it. He's just a horse with some quality. I think it's, you know, probably not, but this is the kind of horse I could see trying to use somewhere for a penny on that idea that he might just end up being the speed of the speed and might be getting good, and might be in a situation where if others are ridden passively, just have a pace advantage in a Grade 2 sprint that just doesn't have a ton of speed. Not a horse I love.
But to me, he's that sort of, you know, we talk about kind of the upgrade based on the prior running line and the way everything shook down. I mean, that was a race with a wild pace signed on. He was part of it, and he boxed on all the way to the wire. I mean, it's not like he completely folded up in there. I was a little bit concerned that maybe the wet track sort of contributed to him running as well as he did, because he has done very well on off going in the past. But your point is not sort of, you know, your point is well taken in that, I mean, it's not like he's been a bum. I mean, this is a horse that can run. He's got fast races on his page. Admittedly, it's been a minute since he visited the winner's circle, but it happened to be at Belmont Park in a situation not dissimilar from this one. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if he showed up with a big effort.
And again, the higher the price, the more I would consider using it. The morning line price would be marginal but this is a horse that I feel like could get ignored. 1,000,000-1 last time, and everybody sees the big race when you're 1,000,000-1 in the slop, and now you're back on a dry track. Definitely some interesting stuff could be happening there. All right, Matt, I think we've come to the end of our portion of another Horse Players Happy Hour. Why don't we do a quick shout out to see if this leaderboard has separated itself at all. Maybe we'll just do a quick shout out to the folks out on top. We'll put in another plug. If you're playing today, if you missed playing today, come back next Friday. Matt will not be in the house. We'll have you elsewhere doing some Preakness coverage for us, but we'll definitely get your thoughts on the key things, and then we'll see who's sitting across from me virtually. Let's run down the folks currently in the top eight. Rich Nilsson, fantastic contest player himself, leading the way with 41.50. Mark Mahoney in second, 41.20. CJ Arrigo hanging in, 37.70. Alexa Zepp, who we talked about before, also with that in that three-way tie with 33.70, coming off that big win over at horseplayers.com. Julie Laboyko, the third one there. Then we have last year's winner. I've been trying to get him to come on one of these shows, but he's been busy. I think he's been golfing every time I reached out to him. Brad Anderson won the BCBC last year. We'll be looking to defend his title, 33.40. Eric Weinschenk in seventh with $32. And Timothy Tracy currently in eighth with 28.80. And we'll give the shout outs down to ninth and 10th because friends of the show, Michael Baychok, the $1 million man, on the cusp, 23.70, and Lou Mazzarelli, Windstar stablemates in there. And then have to note that Alexa Zepp's second entry also in with a shot, so plenty of leverage for her moving forward in this contest. Any closing thought from you, Matt, before we get out of here this week?
No, looking forward to some big racing this weekend. Obviously, the winning you're in races we chatted about, but there's also other races that just in general, it's quality top to bottom this weekend. And I think, again, I can't stress it enough, now is the time to start doing your homework. Don't wait until PPs come out on Breeders' Cup, you know, Tuesday night or Monday night, whenever they end up popping out for Friday and Saturday. Get the jump on things. That way you're not scrambling and you're more or less just putting together wagers as opposed to having to go back and do the deep dive into all these cards because, frankly, you don't have the bandwidth to handle that. No one does. For 14 championship races with full fields, you can't go through and do the X, Y, and Z and then be able to put bets together. Get the jump start on things right now while you've got the time and take notes for this weekend. Win, lose, or draw. Don't draw your opinions and your conclusions this weekend, but at least try to find a little bit of signal going forward, and maybe that starts to sway you one way or the other. No hard and fast rules this weekend, but just keep an eye on things going forward.
I love that point, and we'll just point out how easy it is to, let's say you're a novice player, you might not know all the key Breeders' Cup prep races. Go to breederscup.com, look at the challenge series, and you'll see a complete list for the year. I would say if you want to get started, you know, maybe you've never done trip handicapping before, you want to give it a try. What a great time with all this time between now and the big day. Go rewatch those races, make notes of what you see, and try to, you know, come up with more of a sense of than just what the raw numbers are of what a horse's performance was based on any number of variables. And it's all laid out there for you on the Breeders' Cup website on a silver platter, breederscup.com. Check out the challenge series. Those are races you can go back and look at for the whole year and continue to look at going forward. It's a great, the challenge series is just a great lens, I think, for a lot of different fans to focus their horse playing. And of course, it's a lot of what we're going to be talking about here on Horse Players Happy Hour. These broadcasts are going to continue right through the big day. Matt will be off next week and potentially the week after, but we'll be back thereafter. We hope, you know, God willing, and the creek don't rise. In the meantime, check him out, InTheMoneyPodcast.com, the Matt Bernier Show. You can see here a bunch of stuff from me over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com as well. Matt also writes regularly for RacingPicks.com. Go over there, sign up for their expert picks. Just give your email and you'll get near daily, maybe four times a week.
Four times a week from me, plus a video analysis, so five, but then you have other people filling in the holes. So you get stuff every day of the week if you're a free subscriber.
Worth checking that out for sure. And horseplayers.com. It's not like there's just feeders for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge when we do Horse Player Happy Hour. They're having stuff every day. So you can check out that full roster of events as well. That's going to do it. I will thank Matt Bernier. I will thank our friends at the Breeders' Cup, especially Peter Rotundo Jr., who's such a joy to work with. We'll thank our producer Craig, DJ Unstable, hitting all the right buttons and doing great work for us over there. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, especially those of you who take the time to offer constructive criticism, reach out, interact on Twitter. You see our handles right there, at LoomsBoldly, at Bernier_Matt, or you can hit us up through the contact information over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. We love to hear from folks. We know horse racing Twitter in general can be kind of a gnarly place, but we have this nice little community of folks where it's not gnarly at all. And we've had lifelong friendships grow out of the contest world and out of social media. So it's not all bad, though sometimes it seems that way. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!